to your daily dose of facts to fight off the liberal gaslighting.
You can be in the middle of a hurricane.
You have sanctuary in the city of Chicago.
Or you can be on a calm day. North is still north. You could be in a thunderstorm.
I am angry. We are not going back. Not ever.
North is still north. People can yell at you.
The hell with the Supreme Court. We will defy them.
North is still north. It doesn't change fundamental things. And in this business, right is still right, even if you stand by yourself.
We don't get fooled again. No, no.
Live across the fruited plain and from sea to shining sea,
we're converting the Marxist left 1 hour at a time on the Wendy Bell radio program.
Hey!
Hello, America. I'm so excited to be with you here and beyond the fruited plain. This is the Wendy Bell Radio Program. We're always excited to be behind the microphone, giving you what we believe is 3 hours of common sense truth. Yes, it's conservative values, but our values are American values. They are not extreme. They are not outrageous. They're not hard to understand, and by no means are they complicated, and which is why I think a lot of people are finding this program. If you just have, remember, we have the Wendy Bell Radio Network app. Follow along the live video stream all 3 hours. You get to see all the warts and the wrinkles and all of it. Wendy Bell Radio podcast, wherever you get your favorite listening material, like, follow, share, suggest us, 5-star review us. Radio stations out there, hello, welcome home, you guys. We got a good show. We're going to talk about a lot of, let's just say, a lot of truth coming out. And it's a good thing. We're cracking that bubble. We're cracking that foundation of suck. And take my hand. We're going to do it further today here on the Wendy Bell Radio program. Welcome home. I pledge allegiance to the flag, the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Amen. I remember when I was a little girl, some bad things would happen in my life. As things happen, you make bad decisions. You got to suffer the consequences. And then every now and again, you just get knocked down because life isn't fair. And I remember lamenting to my father one day. I was whining about something that had gone wrong for me. And I remember him looking over his glasses over the Los Angeles Times. And he said, Wheats, my nickname, Wheats. Whoever said life was fair? And I looked at him and I was like, what? And he said, life isn't fair, honey. Better learn it now, because it's just going to get worse. I'm like, oh, thanks, Dad. Great. Great pep talk. Like that. He was right. Of course he was right. And as I got a little older, all of those things that he would say to me, looking over the top of the New York or the LA Times, came true. And I had one of those moments in our household yesterday. We were all kind of waiting the decision from one of my son's favorite schools, the one he really, really wanted to go to, the one he had hyperspaced his mind into. He saw himself going. It was going to be a tough sell. Very elite. And these are difficult times if you don't check the right boxes. And that is a fact. That is something that we cannot control. We can just do the best that we can do. And when the decision comes and you find out that you did not get in, you got to figure some stuff out. And you have to grieve for a little while. And you have to be wounded. And you have to feel shame and maybe embarrassment until you realize, hopefully, in not too long time, that it's okay. Because you're being pushed in a direction away from where you thought you were going to go. The idea of control is so prevalent in so much of what we talk about on this program, but it's also such a big part of our individual lives. We all feel the need to be in control of ourselves, of our situation, of our future, of our happiness. And commonly, we're not. And that's difficult. And it's uncomfortable. And it's really difficult learning how to find comfort in being uncomfortable. So that when you are, it doesn't derail you. It doesn't send you downward. I want to tell this son of mine, who has received a very generous offer from another school, almost free tuition, admittance into this prestigious honors college at this university. And they send him things every single day, every day. The acceptance letter that came was an envelope, and you open it up, and it's like this 3D thing that pops up, and it says, congratulations. You are wanted. He is wanted. And the challenge is to move past rejection, to feel where you are needed. That is a triumphant thing. No college ever came to me and said, we want you. I never got a scholarship. This kid did. And I want to take him by the shoulders and I want to look him in the eyes and I want to say, not only is it all going to be okay, do not forget. You are wanted somewhere. And that's delicious. Isn't it a basic human need? I think of all the basic needs we have. The need to be needed, the need to be desired, the need to be not even accepted. The need to feel comfortable doing what you're doing, being who you are to the best of your ability, and finding the right people who appreciate that, love that, and give it back. What we're seeing so much in this country right now is I look at this path my son is on, and he's going to be fine. You know, he didn't lose a parent. He didn't lose a friend. Murphy didn't die. There's no real tumult in his life. Just perhaps his first feeling of a broken heart. Working really, really hard. Doing everything right. And realizing that others made the cut above you. It's hard not to feel rejected. But I want to take him and I want to say, my love, look at how many people have been rejected recently who decided to get back up really fast and start something new and do it a different way on their terms. I mean, Donald Trump, notwithstanding, getting kicked off of Twitter, starting Truth Social. Think about Tucker Carlson. Think about Megyn Kelly, if we're just going to think about media people. Bill O'Reilly, Glenn Beck. The list goes on and on. Where your path, whether or not you're aware it's going to happen, takes a sharp detour. And you've got to be super uncomfortable, but get comfy with it fast. Because time is ticking and you have an opportunity to do it your way, on your terms, with your heart and your spirit. And then what has happened to all of these people who've made those abrupt left turns or right turns? They've shown us different places to get information, different places to receive medical advice. Different ways to connect with each other. Different ways to get involved. Different places to buy things. Everything is about change. Of course, we know this every single day. We watch it from sun up to dusk. The day changes. But we are on the cusp of something so tantalizing. And it is a pulling away from situations and people and philosophies and politics and promises that don't work. and we're finding that new path. You're turning off where you used to get your news and you're finding different voices. You're listening to professionals who stood up during COVID and they put their flag in the sand and said, you know what? I know it's unpopular, but it's the right thing to do. I need to tell you what's really going on. And all we need to do in order to follow the people who are worth our time, who are worth our energy, is to listen to the voices trying to shut them down. To my son, you are dazzling. You are decent. You are kind. And you are forgiving. You are a finer individual than I will ever be. And you're just beginning. Don't look at that detour as a rejection. Because what they just gave you was the greatest opportunity of your life to chart your path, your way. And I can't wait to see the ride. Quick time out on the Wendy Bell Radio program. Hey, I've got good news out of Catherine Herridge. If I had a girlfriend, it would be her. Just saying. The canceled CBS reporter. Like I said, doors open up next on the Wendy Bell Radio Network. So Catherine Herridge, fired by CBS News because she was one of the last remaining vestiges of honest, objective journalism. Certainly got the axe there, but apparently she's going to land a new gig. So this is where the wall comes up and the window opens. Here you go. Won't be out of a job much longer, so says townhall.com. The former Fox News reporter who CBS News unceremoniously fired is in talks to join Twitter on X in, it's in the preliminary stage of negotiations. That's what the New York Post is reporting. I think this is fantastic, and this is what it says. The award-winning journalist who was controversially fired by CBS News in February in a round of layoffs by corporate parent Paramount met with ex-CEO Linda Yaccarino at the Jefferson Hotel in Washington, D.C. earlier this month. Nothing secret, it seems, anymore. The talks have been described as preliminary. Hey, X. Get her, whatever it costs, get her. Can you imagine where we would be today had Elon Musk not purchased Twitter? None of this, we would have no idea. Michael Schellenberger, Matt Taibbi, these guys, they'd have no clue. We'd have no idea about the revolving door between government and social media, censorship campaigns, all of it. I hope. And I will follow this, keep you posted. I hope she lands there because she is so worth it. Now, I want to turn to this Daily Caller headline. And this is heart-wrenching. So you remember the State of the Union. The Gold Star father up in the balcony who shouted down at Joe Biden during his speech, who was then basically muscled out and kicked out of the proceedings, kicked out of the State of the Union. He said some things to Tucker Carlson, and I want to read this to you, because this is who Joe Biden, this is who the establishment donor class, the Uniparty, this is who they are. Gold Star father Stephen Nkui, probably I'm pronouncing that wrong. Sorry. Arrested at President Joe Biden's 2024 State of the Union, told Tucker Carlson he was never, never contacted by Biden after his son died. Nkui was arrested after rising from his seat during Biden's speech and shouting, "Remember Abby Gate, U.S. Marines," about the Democrat president's infamous withdrawal from Afghanistan. Nkui's son, Marine Lance Corporal Kareem Nikui was among the 13 U.S. service members killed during the suicide bombing amid the chaotic evacuation from Kabul. Carlson learned that the Biden administration never reached out to Nikui since the Gold Star father received his deceased son's remains at Dover. Between the time you spent in Dover receiving your son's remains, staying in the Motel 6 with human feces on the wall, that's where you had to stay. Between that and the State of the Union earlier this month, had you had any contact with Biden or the White House? Tucker asked. Never, Nikui replied. We've never had any contact with the White House or with Biden. And we have reached out, or several people affiliated with us have reached out to them to maybe have a roundtable with them to see what their thinking was, anything. Anything. And it was just something they refused. I don't know why they hate us so much, to be honest with you. I have no idea. You know, you can run a campaign and you can lie and you can tell people who are suffering in every capacity because of your horrendous policies and lack of compassion, understanding, care, any of it. You can lie. But people know. People know that they are not appreciated. People know that they're not concerned for, cared about, that they don't matter. That is the message of this administration to people who demand and deserve our greatest respect. Not even a phone call. And now we will juxtapose that as Joe Biden is set to host some kind of a fundraiser for his reelection in New York today. As he's yucking it up with high dollar donors, Donald Trump will be in church paying tribute to a slain New York Police Department officer who was shot and killed on the job, who left behind a young wife and a one-year-old. Now, you don't need to get breaking news to see and to feel the difference. It's out there in black and white. We're going to talk about that in the minutes ahead. I also want to talk about something that most people will not. And it is cancer related. And we're going to have this discussion coming up after this short break, because we cannot shy away from what we see as the elephant in the room. Far too many people who have no business getting sick, and certainly no business dying, are, and they are quickly. And it is frightening, and we need to open up that channel of communication, all right? So take my hand, and don't go anywhere, because we will next on the Wendy Bell Radio Program. Started asking some questions when Brock and I were at a radio station here in Pittsburgh several years ago. The afternoon drive time slot where we were positioned fell right into the window where the White House press briefings for COVID were every night. And if I'm not mistaken, they were at 5 o'clock. And it always bugged me. A lot of radio people enjoy when their station is the carrier of the hometown baseball team. Or maybe they carry collegiate such and such. And that means that several times a year, you'll be preempted and you won't have to go in and do your job. It bothers me when a sport or something and a press conference, breaking news, when it bothers my opportunity to communicate with you. Like, I want this time. I'm hungry for this time. It matters to me. And we'd have to sit there and listen to Deborah Birx and Tony Fauci and all these people, Mike Pence. And they would stand there like such drips at the podium and deliver what was, you know, very alarming news. This is something that hadn't happened in our lifetimes, right? We weren't told collectively all just to stay home. Our schools didn't all unilaterally shut down. I mean, it was a literal ghost town in my neighborhood. People were afraid to go outside and walk their dogs. And then a series of idiotic decisions that were made to prevent people from being out in the open air, where arguably anybody with a functioning cerebral cortex could say, you're safest, right? I'm just going to go with my rudimentary knowledge of science. If there's a whole atmosphere out there and I step outside, it's better than when I'm going to be inside with a bunch of circulated air and people who might be contaminated, right? Well, let's take down all of the basketball hoops and let's remove all of the swing set swings and let's fill up the skate parks and let's shut down the jogging trails and let's make everybody a prisoner in their homes. Because what could possibly go wrong there, right? Not child abuse, not spousal abuse, not depression, not isolation, not alcoholism, drug abuse, not people just saying, screw it, and just starting to eat, right? Becoming unhealthy. There was months of that, months of that. And we started looking at the CDC and their data. And then they started moving the data around, and then they started burying the data. And what used to be something for Brock and me just to click on and be like, all right, let's monitor what this was last week and where are we now? And we'll cross-reference and we'll do some fact-checking in real time. They made it very difficult, which meant to me that we were onto something. And then we uncovered that they were changing medical examiners and coroners filling out of the death certificates, never been done before, without some kind of a professional organization vote on it. Just sort of magic wanded. Poof. If you think, even if this person died crashing their car into a tree, if you swab them on the slab, God knows why you would, but they did, and the person is positive for COVID, that's a COVID death. That's how they pumped up the numbers. That's how they freaked everybody out. Right. And then when they started this whole campaign to jab children, and you and I were like, well, wait a minute. What about the data? What do we know about how children manage this virus? Show us what you know. And they buried it. And it was this hunt and peck like nobody's business. And we were very, very suspicious. And what did we find out? That 96% of the children who succumbed, allegedly, if you will, to COVID had on average 4 comorbidities. These were not young 12-year-old girls who one minute were in the driveway, you know, jumping rope or riding their bicycles and then just died. And yet that was the story. To encourage all of us, hurry, you don't want anything to happen to your kids. What kind of parent are you? Do what's right. Everybody's doing it. And the campaign went from a suggestion to a bribe, to a push, to a mandate, to Joe Biden wagging his finger and saying it was going to be a winter of darkness and death. And we were like, say what? And now what do we have? Not allowed to talk about all these weird cancers that are going on. Not allowed to talk about people who have died suddenly. You know what's happening. You have common sense. So I want to read this to you. It's from The High Wire. Del Bigtree. You guys know who he is. He's not some wacko fringe conspiracy theorist any more than Stu Peters is, or these people who are always dancing on the outskirts of what people are allowed in the mainstream to say. And this was an article that piqued my attention because the title says this: Keeping Us Sick, What Are Second Cancers, and Why the Silence? Why aren't we allowed to talk about this? Why do they bury the causes of death? Because there's something to hide, and everybody knows it. So now that we have the cards on the table, right? And now that everybody's a little bit uncomfortable, let's settle in a little bit and get comfortable with that. Here's your story. This is on thehighwire.com. Roughly 10 million people die from cancer every year, making it the cause of around 1 in 6 deaths and one of the most significant global health problems. Besides the overlooked explosion in cancer following the COVID-19 jabs, the world has seen a massive 75% rise in the number of cancer deaths between 1990 and 2019, with 20 million new cancers and 9.7 million deaths in 2022. This is according to the World Health Organization. Mind you, these unacceptable numbers exist despite the fact that in 2021, U.S. taxpayers forked out $6.4 billion to the National Cancer Institute to fund its incessant quest to research cancer. And if that weren't enough to ignite and to solidify distrust in the lucrative cancer industry, the American Cancer Society covertly admits that cancer treatments actually increase the likelihood of a second cancer. Say what? Well, first and of course, second cancers are unbelievably profitable for doctors and hospitals and big pharma, but more often than not, devastating to the cancer patient. A novel anti-cancer drug in the United States costs a cancer patient more than $100,000 per year for treatment for unsatisfactory results. Indeed, most cancer drugs only offer modest benefits, with one study putting the median benefit at 2.1 extra months of life, with most survivors likely being incredibly sick. It is heartbreaking. Anyone who has watched a loved one go through cancer treatment will attest to the fact doctors soft pedal the devastation that most often results from cancer treatment. And rest assured, there's no mention of more affordable, more holistic alternative treatments like ivermectin and its anti-cancer mechanisms. Highlighting the shady dealings between doctors and big pharma, in 2019, an organization called STAT reported that 85% of the experts who wrote widely used cancer guidelines received payments averaging over $10,000 from Big Pharma. Again, have I said anything to you so far that makes you say, that's unbelievable? Of course not. Now, the corruption goes a step further, as these guidelines mandate that Medicare pay for off-label use of cancer drugs, which further lines the pockets of those involved. Research shows that physicians consistently paid by Big Pharma are more likely to prescribe that company's drugs. Undoubtedly, the unspoken bonus at the end is the conceivable emergence of the second cancer. So you're a hamster on a wheel. You're a lab rat. And they get rich off of it. How is this any different than the transgender child who all of these hospitals are falling over to mutilate because it's gender-affirming care? No, what it is a mental disease enabled by doctors and medical systems paid by Big Pharma, period. In a testament to its crusade to keep the medical industry in business, the American Cancer Society has known about second cancers caused by cancer treatment since at least 2010 and has successfully kept it out of the cancer conversation for decades. American Cancer Society has confessed that radiation therapy was recognized as a potential cause of cancer many years ago. Huh. Radiation. They also concede that most types of leukemia, including acute myelogenous leukemia, sorry, all these other things that I'm not going to say, can all be caused by radiation. Most cancers caused by radiation therapy develop within just a few years of being irradiated, with the second cancer peaking at 5 to 9 years following exposure. And I'm going to leave you with this. Breaking that down, in 2015, each year, around 13,000 people were diagnosed with MDS, one of these diseases. 6,000 with the secondary form. All of these are leukemia. And another 20,000 diagnosed with this other one. Over half of those cases ended in death. Yet again, it's difficult to determine how many people die from second cancers resulting from cancer drugs, because most deaths are recorded as being from cancer and not the treatment. It's precisely like the hype behind COVID-19. Cancer fear fueled by a wicked and clandestine game of smoke and mirrors. I think the thing that I take from all of this is how far we've wandered off that path of loving life, of protecting it to our greatest ability. And this cavalier nature with which death and the collateral damage of greedy and corrupt people and organizations and governments, how it's all just so kind of blasé now. It's not. It's predictable. It's the same script year after year. And you and I are the lab rats. Now, when we come back, I want to pivot, if you will, to Donald Trump and some national polling. They're trying to throw in some polls that say, my goodness, things are bumping up from Joe Biden. He is really on fire. Well, we'll see. Let's do a little fact checking in real time, shall we? I feel ready. Next on the Wendy Bell Radio Program. Well, now this is unfortunate. You know what? Can I just tell the Biden campaign? And I don't want to give them any tips, right? I don't want to give them any success strategy. But I have to do this because it's for my own personal selfish reasons. Don't ever let Janet Yellen speak on behalf of you, okay? All right? Brock sent me a clip this morning.
She's like watching paint dry.
And I was like, hell no. We're not going to listen to that drip. It's so bad. New York Post headline, Trump leads Biden by 5 in new national poll. Uh-oh. Former President Donald Trump leading Joe Biden by 5 points nationally. This is the 2024 White House race. Well, of course it is in this Fox News survey. It was released Wednesday. Shows the ex-commander-in-chief leading Joe Biden 50-45. Now, what's interesting is when you bring in, you've got your Jill Stein, you got your Colonel West, you sprinkle in some RFK Jr. and the margins don't change. It's still Trump by 5, which I think is fantastic. Now, when you're talking about the top 10 issues facing voters, right? How are the two main leading candidates doing? Well, to find out, we got to go over to CNBC. You're not getting like scintillating broadcasting over here. But you do get one of these data crunchers who's excited to be by the big wall. And he's going to tell you all these numbers. It's not even close. Donald Trump drubbing Joe Biden in 7 of the 10 top priorities per American voters. You ready? All right, here you go.
Now let's look at who voters think have the best policies on these issues. Let's go. Overall economy, the fourth most important issue. Donald Trump has a 30-point lead on that. Crime tied for fourth, 28-point lead for Trump. Inflation, the most important issue, 27-point for Donald Trump. Healthcare, Biden has a 19-point advantage on that. And the middle class, that's a place, as Wolf was talking about, where there is some battle right there. Who has the best policies for the middle class? Let's go to the second tier of issues, which aren't all that far down, but they're not in the top 5.
Wow.
Immigration, 48-point lead for Donald Trump. Taxes, 32 for Trump. China, 28 for Trump. Come to abortion, a 25-point lead for President Biden. And Social Security, another potential battleground area.
Did you guys catch that? On immigration, consistently polling is one of the top 2 things. Economy, You know, inflation, everything that sucks that Janet Yellen's trying to tell you. No, no, no. It's really not what you think it is. You guys remember that $10,000 that Joe Biden said he put into all of your savings accounts, right? I'm still waiting for mine. I haven't seen it. Donald Trump by 48 points over Joe Biden on immigration. Taxes, 32-point advantage for Donald Trump. China, 28% lead for Donald Trump. Crime, 28% bump for Donald Trump. Inflation, 27. That is crazy. And the only things that Joe Biden does well in. Who wants to say that? Well, when it comes to abortion, people like me the best. Oh, that's fantastic. That's a feather in your cap, Joe. Abortion, healthcare. How is that even possible? That just goes to show you how these ads, how the drubbing into your brain of the suck called the Affordable Care Act and all of that nonsense, which has made everything prohibitively expensive, very cold. When was the last time you had a relationship with your doctor? Like where your doctor remembers who you are and remembers stuff about you and is proactive about you? I mean, 10 years, 15 years, ever? So then there's that. And that brings me to this fun little tidbit, which I think is quite enjoyable. HeadlineDailyCaller.com. Obama reportedly has, quote, grave concern Biden will lose to Trump and feels need to intervene. Is that so like 5 years ago, right? He's been intervening from the very beginning. Isn't this the cat who's the puppeteer behind the curtain? I mean, ostensibly, yeah. Former President Barack Obama has grave concern that President Joe Biden will lose to former President Donald Trump in November, which has caused him to get involved, according to the New York Times. With just over 7 months until the election, Biden's been making regular calls to Obama in an effort to discuss the 2024 race for the White House, according to the New York Times. Obama, though, is reportedly making calls of his own to Biden's chief of staff, Jeff Zients, and other top aides to discuss strategy. Did you guys vote for Obama? Because I didn't vote for him or for any of these other clowns. Do you see how they just swoop in and wand wave and decide to come in and manipulate policy? It's so off the rails, it's not even funny. The former president's involvement reportedly comes from a place of fear. You know, I don't believe this. I think this is a lot of setup. Because I read an article today that did something to the effect of between 7% and 18% of voters in like 26 states ought not be on the voter rolls. They're voting from places that are not verifiable residences. If your mail delivery, if your address is a vacant lot, you probably not should not be voting. Tens of thousands, probably hundreds of thousands. So I'm not at all believing that Obama's worried, that he's sitting back somewhere chewing his fingernails, wondering what's going to happen. Ladies and gentlemen, these folks, they've been planning this and plotting this for years. There's going to be something fearful to emerge, and they're going to rely on all of these phantom people who are not off of the voter rolls because secretaries of state like Brad Raffensperger of Suck refuse to do the job because they're on the take. When we come back, hour number two, holy moly, that went fast. Hour number two of the Wendy Bell Radio program. In case there was any confusion, it really is all about blackmail and bribery. And I've got a great case in point for you. Do not go anywhere. Next.